Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Just turn the microphone down, just a touch. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 49, Chapter entitled The Kurus' Mission in Hastinapur, text number 27 and 28. Ishvarasya vitim konu vitunoti anyata puman bumer paravataraya yo vatirno yado kule Ishvarasya vidim konu. Ishvarasya vidim konu.
Ishvarasya vidim konu.
Vitu notyanyata puman.
Vitu notyanyata puman.
Umer bharatvataraya.
Umer bharatvataraya.
Yo vitirno yado kule.
Yo vitirno yado kule.
Ishvarasya vidim konu.
Ishvarasya vidim konu.
Vidu notyanyata puman.
Vidu notyanyata puman.
Bhumer bharavataraya.
Bhumer bharavataraya.
Yo vitirno yado kule.
Yo vitirno yado kule.
Of the Supreme Lord.
Of the Supreme Lord.
Vidim.
Vidim.
The law.
The law.
Kaha.
Kaha.
What?
What?
Nu.
Nu.
At all.
At all.
Vidu noti.
Vidu noti.
Can shake off.
Can shake off.
Anyata.
Anyata.
Otherwise.
Otherwise.
Puman.
Puman.
Person.
Person.
Bhume.
Bhume.
Of the earth.
Of the earth.
Para.
Para.
The burden.
The burden.
Avataraya.
Avataraya.
In order to diminish.
In order to diminish.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Who?
Who?
Avatirnaha.
Avatirnaha.
Has descended.
Has descended.
Yado.
Yado.
Of Yadu.
Of Yadu.
Kule.
Kule.
In the family.
In the family.
Translation of purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Text 27, translation. Even so, gentle Akrura, because my unsteady heart is prejudiced by affection for my sons, these pleasing words of yours cannot remain fixed there, just as lightning cannot remain fixed in a cloud. Text 28. Who can defy the injunctions of the Supreme Lord, who has now descended in the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burden? Translation responsibly. Who can defy the injunctions of the Supreme Lord?
Who can defy the injunctions of the Supreme Lord?
Who has now descended in the Yadu dynasty?
Who has now descended in the Yadu dynasty?
To diminish the earth's burden. Purport. Naturally, we would like to ask Dhritarashtra, if you know all this, why don't you behave properly? Of course, this is exactly Dhritarashtra's point. He feels that since events have already been set in motion, he is helpless to change them. In fact, events have been set in motion by his attachment and sinful propensities, and therefore he should have taken responsibility for his own acts. Lord Krishna clearly states in the Bhagavad Gita 5.15, Na dite kasyachit papam. The Supreme Lord does not accept responsibility for anyone's sinful activities. It is a dangerous policy to claim that we are acting improperly because of destiny or fate. We should take up Krishna consciousness seriously and create an auspicious future for ourselves and our associates. Finally, one may argue that, after all, Dhritarashtra is involved in the Lord's pastimes and is actually his eternal associate. In answer to this, we may say, that the Lord's pastimes are not only entertaining, but also didactic. And the lesson here is that Dhritarashtra should have acted properly. This is what the Lord wanted to teach. Dhritarashtra's claims that Krishna came to relieve the burden of the earth, but the earth's burden is precisely the improper behavior of its inhabitants. So let us take the lesson the Lord wants to teach us here and be instructed for our benefit. Om Gyanti Manandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamai Dadati Swa Padantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhubya Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Vibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare So in philosophy, this is one of the great questions which is often asked. It is the argument between destiny and free will. Do we have free will? Is a free will which is creating our destiny? Or is everything predestined? And some philosophers, they argue both ways. Some philosophers argue that everything is free will. And some philosophers argue that everything is predestined, like that. So from the Vaishnava point of view, or from the point of view of the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat philosophy, then everything is a combination of these two. It is partially destiny or fate which is controlling us partially, and is also partially our free will which is also controlling our future, like that. So it is not just one or the other. This is the problem with many conditioned souls. They need things to be one or the other, like that. But in a more mature understanding, or a more developed understanding, is that free will and destiny simultaneously are acting upon everyone in this material world. Because in our previous lifetimes, we committed so many activities. We did so much piety previously, and we did so much sin previously. And all the reactions are stored within our subtle body. Now, this is described by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the Nectar of Devotion. In our subtle body, we have many seeds of desires. And all these seeds of material desires are there because in our previous lives, we performed many pious activities and many sinful activities. And because of this pious and sinful activity, those impressions, which is called samskara, that is left upon our consciousness. When the conditioned soul when the soul comes into the material world, he becomes covered by a subtle body, made of intelligence, mind, and false ego. And then that subtle body, which covers the soul, that same subtle body carries us from gross body to gross body, lifetime after lifetime. So we have the same subtle body, we have the same mind that we've had for millions of births. That's why we identify with the mind so much, because it's the same mind we've had for millions of births. And there's so many impressions in that mind from many, many births. And you'll see, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter of the Gita, what is the 16th chapter called in Bhagavad Gita? Divine and demoniac natures, yeah. So Krishna describes in the beginning of the chapter the demoniac psychology or mentality. And then later in the chapter, what does he describe first? The auspicious qualities. Does anyone remember?
Demoniac qualities.
First, demoniac qualities?
No, first divine qualities.
First divine qualities. Verses 1 to 3 gives a long list of divine qualities. Yeah, verses 1 to 3 gives a very long list of the divine qualities. And then verse 6, he gives the demoniac qualities from memory. So, in between the conversation which takes place in the Gita, in the 16th chapter, then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur adds in extra dialogue which is taking place between Krishna and Arjuna. And Krishna explains, in the commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that the demoniac qualities, and you can say also the pious qualities, or the divine qualities, they are seen from, Krishna explains, from birth. If someone is demoniac, you'll see it from birth. Maybe not from birth, but, you know, from, you know, the age of 6 months, 1 year. Like, you'll see children, if they're, some kids are just terrible. You know, just ask my wife, she works in a childcare centre. Some kids are not very pleasant, like that. And some children, from a very young age, you can see they have a very giving, very sharing nature. Right? You put a group of children in the sandpit, and one kid wants to keep everything for himself, and he hits the other children. So it's like a demoniac nature, which is there from birth, practically. And some children are just very sharing, very giving, very polite, very courteous, and that's there from their previous lifetime. So all of these impressions are in our subtle body, and we carry this subtle body from lifetime to lifetime, like that. And all of these seeds of material desires are within our consciousness, right? We have so many material desires to do pious activity and to do sinful activity. This is all from our previous lifetime. Like, we just have a desire to do good things for people. Some people just have a desire to do good things. You know, they go to, Africa, and they join the Red Cross, and they dedicate their lives just to doing pious activity for people. You know, looking after people. They live a very selfless existence. And this is because in their previous lifetimes, they've developed this pious nature. And then this comes out in this lifetime. And similarly, some people, they just have sinful desires. Desires to do inauspicious activities. And this is just coming from their previous lifetime. It's all within our subtle body. So a certain amount of our life is predestined. Meaning that when we come into this life, we're dealing with a certain amount of previous conditioning, which we have to deal with and we have to recognize. We have to acknowledge that we have a certain amount of proclivity for certain activities, which is coming from our previous life. And we can't completely ignore that. And actually, we have to identify that. You know? My spiritual master said, I heard him, I was listening to a lecture in 1996, and one lecture he gave in 1995 and 1996, and, you know, sometimes you hear something which changes your life, like that. The spiritual master will often say something, very small sutra. The guru will just say one sentence, and that will change your life. Your whole destiny becomes changed just by that potent instruction, like that. So I was listening to one instruction, and he said, you can't get out of the material world until you realize that you're in the material world. In other words, if you don't understand and realize and accept that you have material desires, how will you transcend those material desires? So that changed my life. I got married about 6 months later. Because, you know, we don't always realize we have material desires. Right? We think, I'm not conditioned. You don't have the courage to admit to your material desires, or you don't understand how conditioned you are. Right? Other people can see it very plainly and very clearly, but for ourselves, sometimes it's very difficult to see what we're actually like. Right? Because we always give ourselves a great benefit of the doubt. Right? We always tend to think we're a lot better than what we are. When you look in the mirror, you will see the positive things. Right? You might be the ugliest person in the world, but when you look in that mirror, you'll see some nice things, right? Because that's the nature of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is proud, right, to a certain extent. So therefore, because of that, you will always see, it's hard to see ourselves properly. Therefore, in spiritual life, Rupa Goswami explains, in the nectar of instruction, the Upadeshamrita, he gives 11 verses. And in those 11 verses which Rupa Goswami gives in the Upadeshamrita and the Nectar of Instruction, everything in spiritual life, everything which is necessary in spiritual life, to go from the very beginning of spiritual life to the highest level of God consciousness is explained in those 11 verses. And when it comes to associating with devotees, Rupa Goswami gives 6 instructions, right? 6 ways to associate with the devotees, which he calls loving exchanges, Priti Lakshana, which means to exchange affection between devotees, like that. So this is how devotees associate with each other, right? They exchange affection, like that. And Rupa Goswami says the way they exchange affection is that you give them prasadam and you accept prasadam. Right? Anyone have a problem with that instruction?
No.
Right? Not so difficult to carry out and quite pleasant. And gives you a great opportunity to capture a devotee's heart. Just like yesterday, we got back from Harinam and we got back about, I don't know, just after 2 o'clock, and all the prasadama crossways had run out yesterday. It must have been a very busy day. So by 2 o'clock, everything was run out. So I got back, you know, at 2 o'clock, and we just finished Harinam, we're hungry. And then there was nothing left. And Chiranjeev Prabhu said to me, he said, I saved you something. So automatically, I'm indebted to him. Automatically. Right? So this is affection. This is Priti Lakshan. This is the loving exchange of affection between devotees. And the more we cultivate this, then the closer the society of devotees becomes. Prabhupada says in 1968-69, like in the very early days of ISKCON, maybe even 66-67, Prabhupada would often write in his letters, at the end of his letters, he said, this movement will go on by love and trust. Right? Prabhupada wrote it, if you go back and look at the letters in 60, I think it's around 68, 69, might be a little bit earlier also. Prabhupada says it again and again, like maybe a few dozen times. He writes this in different letters to different devotees. This movement will go on by love and trust. Right? So if you analyze those two words, right, those two words are quite powerful. Right? Love. Right? That means devotees have to love each other. Right? It doesn't even mean we like each other. Right? It's even more than that. Right? Which might be frightening for some people. Like, you know, wow, I've got to love. You know, it's like I haven't loved for about, you know, 60 million lifetimes. You know, my heart is closed like that, but I have to love like that. But Prabhupada says devotees have to love each other. If we don't love each other, right, how's the movement going to go on? We will separate in due course of time. The movement will not go on. It won't go on powerfully. It will go on, but it won't go on powerfully. But if the devotees love each other, it means this movement is unbreakable. It means nothing can affect this movement, right? If the devotees love each other, right? And if they love each other, others will want to come into that fold as well. They'll also want to be loved. Everyone wants to be loved, right? So that will be the most attractive thing. And the other quality Prabhupada said is trust. Right? Trust means that you don't... define it? Trust means that we don't break someone else's trust. Like that. That is trust. You know, you have to trust, be able to trust the other devotees completely. You know, completely trust, be able to trust each other. Right? Not that we're going to let each other down, not that we're going to say things behind each other's back all the time. Not that we're going to, you know, not really be, you know, say, you know, be all nice to each other, but when, you know, someone really needs something, then we're not there for the other devotee. Not that, you know, one devotee hasn't come to the temple for a long time and no one notices. Not that, you know, someone's sick and no one goes and looks after that devotee. You know, that's not trust, right? And that's not going to increase the trust and the love between the Vaishnavas. Right? So this is the mood that Prabhupada wanted within our movement. So this is what Priti Lakshana means. Priti Lakshana means exchanges of affection. You know, it has to be a very deep exchange. Krishna consciousness is very deep. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the devotee has 26 qualities. Right? 26 qualities of a devotee. One of the qualities is called a gambhira. What does gambhira mean?
Deep.
Yeah, grave or deep, like that. It means very grave, very deep. The room where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to live in Jagannath Puri is called the Gambhira. Has anyone been to that room? Has anyone been to that room in Jagannathpur? Like that? Yeah, you've been to that room? Yeah. So in that room in Jagannathpur, so if you want to understand something about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's consciousness, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the room in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed in Jagannath Puri for 18 years was called the Gambhira. Very deep place, very great. And if you go there in a very humble and very sober mood, you will get some realization of the consciousness which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in that room. Very deep state of consciousness. So devotees are grave, they're deep, right? They're not superficial like that. One time Prabhupada was, it might have been 1966 even, I think. It was like very early in our movement. 67 it might have been. In San Francisco. Prabhupada was having a kirtan on the beach. And at the end, Prabhupada was just there with a small group of devotees. And at the they had a kirtan on the beach. And at the end, then Prabhupada was doing the Prema Dwani prayers. And he was saying, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories. And then Prabhupada said, all glories to the Pacific Ocean. Like that. And then Prabhupada points out, why is the Pacific Ocean? What's the glory of the Pacific Ocean? It is deep. Right? And Prabhupada says the consciousness of a very advanced devotee is that even though on the surface there may appear to be different things going on, but he's very deeply absorbed in Krishna at all times. Even externally, you may see the pure devotee, you know, different emotions going on, but he's very deep in his consciousness, like that. So, Krishna consciousness has to become a very deep thing. The exchanges between the Vaishnavas have to become a very deep thing. It has to become very real. And when it's very real, very affectionate, very deep, it becomes very satisfying to the heart of ourselves and to others. So then, Rupa Goswami explains two ways to exchange affection is to give prasad, receive prasad. Another two ways is to give gifts and to receive gifts from the devotees. And it's an interesting point that in receiving something is actually takes more effort than to give something, actually. Even though when you give something, it takes effort. You know, if you do something nicely for a devotee, you make a present, then you have to wrap the present, you have to write on the card, right? You have to do, you know, it takes effort to give something. But it takes more effort to receive something graciously and properly and do it in such a way that that person feels satisfied for all the effort they've put in. Right? And just like one devotee was telling a story, one devotee was travelling from another country and that devotee liked pizza who was coming. From one country to, I think they're flying from America to Hawaii, I think. So they're flying from America to Hawaii, and the devotee who was coming from America to Hawaii, he liked pizza. So the devotee in Hawaii, he cooked the pizza very nicely for that devotee. And then the devotee arrived there, you know, after his flight and came there, and picked him up from the airport and took him to the temple, and the devotee came in and sat down, they served the pizza, and he picked up the pizza, and he put it down, and he said, it's not very good. Yeah, pizza's not very good. So how did that devotee feel? Right? After putting in so much effort, then the devotee was just treated like that. He didn't feel very... So the devotees have to be gracious. It means in terms of loving exchanges, if someone does something for you, if someone gives you something, a gift, like that, you have to be gracious in receiving that gift, like that. And then, you know, if the... You know, for example, if someone, you know, cooks you sweet rice, and they, you know, cook a few and they make a few and then they offer it to Krishna and then they give it to you and serve it to you and then you eat it, you know, then you say, well, thank you very much for cooking that for me. You know, I really appreciate that you did so much effort. However, you forgot to put sugar in it. It was actually salt. You know. So I appreciate your effort, but, you know, there's salt in the sweet rice. Like that. These things can be said, but the point is there has to be graciousness within the exchange between the devotees, like that. So, Rupa Goswami points out that these exchanges have to be done in this way, like that. So these are these six loving exchanges between Vaishnavas, like that. And the other exchange, the other two exchanges are to reveal one's mind in confidentially to inquire confidentially and to reveal one's mind in confidence. These are loving exchanges. And this particular love exchange is very important for devotees in order to make advancement in spiritual life. You have to reveal your mind in confidence to other devotees, because as we pointed out before, when you look at yourself in the mirror, you'll mainly only see good things, right? But other devotees will see where you're actually at. In turn, other people who know you very well see where you're actually at, where your conditioning are, where your anattas are, right? Where the problems in your personality are. And if you don't have those deep, loving, trusting relationships with devotees, those things can't be revealed to you, right? If you don't have people who you can trust, and if you don't make close friendships with devotees, those things cannot be revealed to you. And if those things are not revealed to you, it's very difficult to make spiritual advancement. Right? And it takes courage to be able to actually go to another devotee who you're close to and say to that devotee, you know, Prabhu, please reveal to me what my faults are. You know, or I have an area of concern. Can you please give me some advice on this? But that takes courage, because what you're going to hear is not necessarily going to be very pleasing to your false ego. Right? But it's going to be very beneficial for you. So therefore, it is necessary that we have this kind of exchange between the devotees in order to purify our consciousness. Like here. So since we came to this material world, we have been carrying the same material desires are coming with us lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. You know, our subtle body is carrying the same material desires again and again and again. Right? And we need to be aware of what those material desires are, because they're within our consciousness in seed form. And sometimes we don't recognize what those material desires are, but they are there within our consciousness. So to get back to the original point of the verse, is that how much is based on predestiny and how much is based on free will, right? So there's quite a lot based on predestiny. In other words, we come into this world, into this lifetime, with a certain conditioning. And we do have to recognize that conditioning, right? We do have to understand we have a certain material nature, right? Prabhupada points out that the spiritual master's duty is to engage the disciple according to his psychophysical makeup. Everyone has a different psychophysical makeup, right? It means his psychology, means his subtle body, and his physical body is has a particular nature. And the spiritual master, his duty, and the senior devotees, their duty is to point this out to us, right? That we have this particular nature and we should engage this particular nature in this particular way. So this nature is developed from our previous lifetime. We come into this lifetime, we have a particular nature. So this is predestiny. It means we'll have certain material desires. And you see in this day and age, in Kali Yuga, you'll see that generally people are being born under the influence of two of the three modes of material nature. Right? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita there are three modes of material nature. And we see at this point in Kali Yuga, nearly everyone who's being born is under the influence of two of them. Yeah. Anyone like to give a guess? Wrong. Goodness and goodness. No, passion and ignorance. Right. Passion, right, and ignorance. Right? It's virtually, that's everyone. That virtually describes everyone in Kali Yuga. When Prabhupada got to America on the Jaladuta, right, and he was sitting in Boston Harbor and he was writing in his diary, and he said he looked at the Boston skyline, he saw America for the first time. He saw the Western world for the first time. And Prabhupada said, it is simply passion and ignorance. He said, that's all. And he said, how will I give them the holy name of Krishna? How will I make anyone here interested in Krishna consciousness? Right? But because Prabhupada was so powerful and had so much faith in the holy name, he actually did it. He transformed the hearts of people who were totally in passion and ignorance and began to elevate them towards the mode of goodness and then into practicing or approaching pure goodness or pure devotional service. That's how powerful Prabhupada was. He could actually go against the tide or the force of Kali Yuga. All the energy of Kali Yuga, Prabhupada could counteract that. Actually, it says that Kali flees in the presence of a pure Vaishnava, of a Mahabhagavat. You see in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when Parikshit Maharaj, when a pure Vaishnava came, Kali flew. Kali just fled in fear of Parikshit Maharaj. So this is how powerful Prabhupada was, that Kali was even taken aback. Right? And then a great battle took place, and the battle's still going on between the Sankirtan movement, between Kali, like that, all of Kali's army. Like that's a huge battle which is taking place. So within our consciousness, when we are born, especially, you see, most people in this day and age, their psychophysical makeup is very much in passion and ignorance. Right? It's hard to find people who have a lot of goodness these days. Right? There are, goodness is there. All three of them are always there. There's no such thing as pure passion or pure, you know, ignorance or pure goodness. There's no such thing. It's just one or the other. Even Adolf Hitler, right? Which modes of material nature was he predominantly in?
Passion.
Ignorance? And passion. Predominantly. Right? The man was predominantly ignorant and predominantly passionate. But he was a vegetarian. Right, so there's mode of goodness in there too. Also, Saddam Hussein, right? Predominantly ignorant, predominantly passionate. Always looked very pucker, you know, very well shaved, very orderly, you know, very well organized. That's mode of goodness. Like that. So all three qualities are always there, but in Kali Yuga, for some reason, we're very much passionate and ignorant by nature. So this is predestiny. Right? This is what we come with. And we have to engage what we have in Krishna's service, right, to the best of our ability. But we must understand, if you stay in passion and ignorance for the rest of your life, you won't go back to Godhead. This is what the Bhagavatam teaches in the second chapter of the first canto. You don't go back to Godhead. Right? You have to gradually elevate yourself into the mode of goodness while performing your bhakti or your devotional service. Right? Devotional service becomes effective from the platform of the mode of goodness. Right? The mode of passion, the nature of the mode of passion, is that we're always thinking in the future. Right? Just like if you're on the mode of passion, you might be sitting here in the Bhagavatam class, but you're thinking, what do I have to do today? Right? My to-do list, right? I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to be there, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. Right? That's passion. Right? Now, mode of ignorance means you're thinking about all the things that you should have done yesterday that you haven't done yet. Right? That's someone who's in the mode of ignorance. Right? They haven't even done what they're supposed to have done yesterday yet. So they're just thinking of the past. Right? Their consciousness is just entirely in, oh, you know, I haven't done this yet, I haven't done that, I haven't done my ironing, I haven't done my washing, I haven't cleaned my house for 3 weeks, I haven't... it just goes on and on. That's mode of ignorance, right? So we have to bring ourselves into the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness means present consciousness. Mode of goodness means in the present. Passion is in the future, right? It's always active, right? It's got to keep moving. It's got to be somewhere else. We're not somewhere else. We're here. That's where we are. We're not somewhere else, right? That will come in due course of time. That will just come in due course of time. You don't have to worry about the future. It will come, right? You have to be preparing yourself now for it. And don't worry about the past. It's very difficult for conditioned souls to let go of the past. This is one of the great challenges for the mind of the conditioned soul, is to let go of the past. Right? Oh, I had that. You know, if you listen to practically every song on the radio these days, right? It's all passion and ignorance. It's like, when will I get her? Or, I used to have her and she broke my heart. When will I get her? I used to have her and she broke my... Yeah, it's just passion and ignorance. It's like, get into the present. Yeah, why don't we have nice songs on the radio about the present? You know? I'm sitting under a tree and that's where I am. And now I'm going to chant my japa. Yeah. You know? Why don't we have something about the mode of goodness, right? It's all just passion, something you're never going to get. And the interesting thing about passion, right? Passion is always in the future. And most of the time you never actually get what you want. Right? Who wrote that song? You can't always get what you want.
Jagger.
Is that Mick Jagger, right? He's the Acharya. Right? That's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, he's the Maha Acharya. The Queen made him a knight. He's now Sir Mick Jagger. Right? What was his contribution to humanity? Right? We should actually listen to him. What was that? Yeah, that's right. He did. Yeah, him and I think the Beatles paid half and half. I think George and John and Paul paid for half, and Mick and what's the other one? Keith. I think they paid for the other half. So he's making progress in spiritual life. Radha Lundanishwara, who were Prabhupada's favourite deities in London. If you ever get the chance to go to London, then in this lifetime, they're Prabhupada's favourite deities in London, Radha Lundanishwara. First deities installed in the west of Radha and Krishna. Like that, Mick Jagger paid for some of the marble which they're standing on, probably still standing on. So he's done some amazing service. And he also did some other service for us. He wrote some very notable lyrics. You can't always get what you want. And then he wrote another great sutra. I can't get no satisfaction, but I try, and I try, and I try, and I try, but I can't get no. Right. So this is just the material world, right? And that is the state of consciousness everyone is conditioned by in the material world. But if you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, you have to get out of the mode of passion, out of the mode of ignorance, and be in the mode of goodness, which means you have to be present. Right? If you're chanting your japa now, that's what you're doing. Right? You're not chanting your japa now because it's Bhagavatam class. We don't chant our japa in Bhagavatam class. Right? I was pointing this out to a devotee yesterday, that if you're chanting your japa, right, in Bhagavatam class, are you doing Shravanam or are you doing Kirtanam? Right? Because you can only be doing one at a time. You can't be doing both. Either you're chanting your japa, right, attentively for the pleasure of Krishna, or you're hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam attentively for the pleasure of Krishna. Right? It can't be both. Right? That's not the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness means you're present now. You do the activity you're doing now and you do it with devotion for the pleasure of Krishna. Right? That is the mode of goodness. And if we live our lives like that, our advancement becomes very steady and very progressive. Right? And everything, someone who's in the mode of goodness and is practicing devotional service like that, they will just do things in an orderly fashion. They'll do the activity they're performing at that time, they'll do it properly, with devotion and full attention to Krishna, and then they'll move on to the next activity. Right? And you just do as much as you can do in a day. You can't do everything in one day. I mean, my mother had a darshan with Tamal Krishna Maharaj many years ago, and they were talking about, you know, business and things like that. And he was giving her, like, advice on how to, you know, run businesses and so forth. And she was asking him, she was saying about, you know, because he was so busy, he was a GBC man and, you know, had a lot of responsibility. And he said, you can only do so much in one day. Yeah, you can only do so much in one day, right? So in one day, you have a set amount of activities, and an organized person has a diary, right? He knows what he's going to be doing, right? He knows what he's doing between 9 and 10, he knows what he does between 10 and 11, he knows what he does between 11 and 12. And you stick to your plan. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's always, you know, material world always throws new things in. But you stick to your plan as much as you can, and you do each activity, and when it's completed nicely, and you leave yourself enough time to do that activity properly, then you move on to the next activity. Right? That's doing devotional service in the mode of goodness. And that leads to pure goodness. Right? This point has to be understood by devotees. If you see Srila Prabhupada, right, do you ever see Srila Prabhupada? You know, any video of Srila Prabhupada where Prabhupada's running somewhere? You know, Prabhupada's late. Prabhupada's, you know, he's running, you know, we see all of us running to the temple and, you know, running across the courtyard, and devotees run here, and, you know, devotees, you know, we get into the mode of passion and so forth, the mode of ignorance. Prabhupada was just always very orderly, very punctual, you know, very organized like that, because he was in Shuddha Sattva, he was in pure goodness. So, we see in our previous lifetime we have a certain amount of predestiny which affects us. But then, as this verse is, or as is being described in this purport, we have a certain amount of free will as well. It means what you do, even though we have a certain amount of conditioning that we have to live with and that we're born with in this material world and we live with every day, but at the same time, we have a certain amount of free will. In other words, I've come into this lifetime, this is what I am. Right? I have this particular body, I have this particular subtle body, this mind, this particular intelligence. But now I have free will to make decisions. Right? And that's what it means. You have to make the best use of a bad bargain. Okay? We all have a bad, negative background in the material world. We have a lot of material desires in this lifetime. But from now on, we have to progress, right, as devotees, with our free will. We have to surrender to Krishna. We have to give ourselves to Krishna. Right? And we cannot make arguments. Because here, it is being said, Dhritarashtra is saying, well, everything now is the arrangement of the Lord. Right? Everything's the arrangement of the Lord. Everything's already in motion. The battle's going to take place. There's nothing I can do about it. Right? Everything is destined. Right? But that's a false philosophy. Dhritarashtra, at this point in time, could stop the battle. Right? And how could he stop the battle?
Chastising
Duryodhana. Right? He has to do something about Duryodhana. Right? And that was the right thing to do. When Duryodhana was born, right, there were jackals crying, right, there was wind howling, right, it was inauspicious. When he was born, and Vyasadeva said, kill the child. That's Vyasadeva. Yeah, you never say kill a child. That's sinful. It's unheard of. You don't kill the child. But Vyasadeva said at the time of his birth, he said, kill him. He said, this child is going to destroy this dynasty. Right? So he wouldn't do it. He didn't follow the guru's instruction. And then what happened? The dynasty got destroyed. Like that. So this is free will. Free will means we have to make difficult decisions in life, but when making those difficult decisions, you have to surrender to the order of the spiritual master. Right? It may be very difficult for us to make some of the decisions we have to make in our life, but if the spiritual master gives us an instruction, even if it's difficult, we have to follow it. And if we follow it, everything will come out auspicious, like that. But if we don't follow it, nothing auspicious will take place in the long run. You may get some short-term, what you think is pleasure, but long-term, nothing will be auspicious. Yeah? So this is the test of every disciple. Every disciple has to face the same test. Right? You have to surrender to the order of the guru. And whatever the order of guru is, you follow that. And that's what disciple means. Right? And if you do not follow the order of guru, do not call yourself disciple, because you're not qualified. Disciple means you will follow whatever the guru says, how difficult it may be. It may be difficult, but that's your choice. You want to get out of the material world, or you want to stay in the material world? Right? And if you follow the guru's instruction, guaranteed you will go back to Godhead. Right? So this is the choice. But Dhritarashtra is not making the right choice here. Okay. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Speaking about that, the mode of goodness is fully present in one activity and then moving on to the next activity. I mean, where does the activity of planning and visualizing the future come into?
Yeah, like we said, that's mode of goodness. Because, like we said, a mode of goodness person has a diary. He has a plan. It's like, Prabhupada arrived in America and he had seven purposes of his temple. He had, a trunk full of books. There was a plan there. Like, it wasn't all unorganized. Motor goodness person is always organized like that. But the point is that he's not, if someone's very passionate, they have a certain energy about them. Passion just has an energy like that. And when we're young and we're passionate, and when you're old and you're passionate, it's an energy, right? But the point is, even more Brahma, in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, he has to use the mode of passion to create the universe, right? But he uses it like a tool. Like, he picks it up and he's in the mode of, pure goodness or goodness like that. He picks it up, and now, if you're going to work, then you have to get a little bit passionate in order to kriya. The word kriya means force, like that. So in order to do the activity, there has to be some energy applied to do the activity. But it's just, there's a mode in which one works. Yeah, and there's a very difference. When a person's very passionate, their intelligence gets stolen and they get carried away like that. And the mode's very different. Someone in the mode of goodness, even though he may be very active and he's working, but still there's a centeredness about his consciousness. So it's like it's a different thing. So what we're recommended to do, because all three modes will be there all the time, but primarily we should be situated in our subtle body in the mode of goodness. means you're orderly, together, peaceful, means like that. And then someone who's very organised and like that, then he can just do things in a very methodical way, like that. And he's active for Krishna, he likes to be active, and he'll use the mode of passion, but he doesn't get controlled by that passion.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, so maybe that gives some clarity. Do you want to add something?
I'm just thinking that the mode of passion is definitely necessary to create.
Yeah.
There's, it's finding balance there. You know, visualizing and wanting to improve and generate energy and momentum, but sort of the push of passion at the same time. Doing the answers to be nice and say, so it's different on them.
Yeah.
Use passion is goodness.
Yeah. So, a person, you know, a way to understand it is like, okay, like we have to build, do some building today. So then a mode of goodness person is I also have to chant my rounds. I have to get up early, you know, I have to chant my rounds. Yeah. I have to go to Bhagavatam class. I have to, you know, take prasadam. Yeah, I have to do some yoga, some exercise for my body. I have to read some of Prabhupada's books and I have to do some building today. So that's the mode of goodness, right? It's all structured and he knows what time he's going to use for the day to do that. Mode of passion means, you know, he'll be chatting his japa while he's riding his bike on the way to the building site, right? You get to the, you know, you'll eat whenever, right? He might do yoga, but he probably won't. He probably won't read Prabhupada's books, right? He'll work far past his deadline, you know, probably up to 12 o'clock at night, come back, crash out because of passion. And passion, if controlled, can be lifted to the mode of goodness. Passion, if not controlled, will always end in ignorance. And then, you know, at the end of the day, he's so wiped out from his passion, he sleeps for like 9 hours, right? Totally destroys his consciousness for the next day. And then he wakes up, real, you know, wondering, why is I'm struggling with material desires? So that's like a difference between the two, on a, like a practical way to find that.
And I would say like
this,
you were speaking about maturity, but some sort of consciousness. And I would hardly anybody's doing Gavadana Sanskara, but some parents don't desire actually to have a child. So when we meet them, how did he actually receive Rani Akshas? He had the desire for a child. So Prabhupada points out that this is actually quite right for them receiving a child. So what effect does a mother's consciousness, this desire for a child, or father's consciousness, have on this bird's souls?
Yeah, so then there's something there. It's like all of us, none of us here were born from Gavadan Samskara. Is it? Is anyone? No, maybe Grudger was. You were born from Gavadan Samskara? You were born from Gavadan Samskara? Not born, okay.
My brother was.
Your brother was? Okay, so his brother. His brother's far out. No, I'm not saying he's not far out. I'm just saying his brother's really far out. He's like, if you meet his brother's poof. I mean, this guy's far out, but his brother's like really far out. No, I've never met his brother. But the point is that none of us here were born from Garbhadhan Samskara, but we're not bad people. You know, I mean, we're not bad like to the core. You know, there's some pretty bad people on earth at the moment. We're not bad people. Right, we have material desires, we're affected by the mode of passion a lot, we're affected by the mode of ignorance a lot. Right? But there must be a certain amount of mode of goodness there, probably a lot of mode of goodness, the fact that we were even attracted to take the devotional life. Right? So it's not that, you know, the parents, you know, and generally you look at devotees' parents, most devotees' parents are quite good people also. You know, but because of the way Kali Yuga has taken place, at this point in time in the West, and even in India now, that just because of the influence of Kali, people think breaking the regulative principles is normality. They think there's nothing wrong with eating meat. It's like the other day I saw my uncle and auntie, and they're very nice people. You know, very nice people. My auntie's a very nice person. But she eats a lot of meat. Right? So, you know, she doesn't know any difference because she's in ignorance, very conditioned, because Kali Yuga is so powerful, the influence it's having on everyone. But still, people are still good. You know, most people are good people on earth, but they're covered by the modes of, you know, what we have to do is take those good people and try to show them that there's a better way to live, you know, which is by practicing devotional principles and spiritual principles and regulative principles like that. So I don't know, does that have to?
Yeah, so I mean, if that's a good person and a bad person, and both show symptoms of ignorance and compassion, how would you discriminate between these two people because they have the, you know, sort of same behavior?
The mode of passion. One way to understand the three modes of nature. The mode of passion, people very much in the mode of passion, primarily their lives are dedicated to themselves. Right? And you see, most people are in the mode of passion these days. You know, most people, you know, they do nice things for other people, but mainly it's about them. Mainly. Even if they say it, but mainly it's about them. Mode of goodness are people who are more selfless. You know, their lives are more about others. And you'll see there's people like that. They run like charity institutions and things like that. It lies more or less about everyone else. So really they do a lot for themselves. That's more mode of goodness. A mode of ignorance is harming other people, doing bad things to other people. You know, all those suicide bombers and all those guys. That's tamagun. That's ignorance. That's black ignorance. You know, people who drive planes into buildings. You know, people who blow up other people. That's ignorance. It's just tamagun. Right? So that's a way to understand like the three modes of material nature. People in goodness are more. So devotees, we have to get into the mode of goodness, which means we're not passionate, means we're not so interested in ourselves. We're not ignorant, we don't want to hurt other people. We want to do good for other people, but we don't want to do good for other people. We want to do transcendental good for other people. We want to give them shuddha-sattva. We want to give them the internal energy of Krishna. Because the mode of goodness is still the external energy. Yeah, we don't want people just to be vegetarians. We want them to become Krishnarians. Right? Prabhupada used that term, Krishnarian. We don't want the whole world to be vegetarian. We do it in the beginning. Right? We say to people, be vegetarian, that's the beginning. But we want, ultimately want people to offer their food to God. Because then Krishna says, and all the sin will be destroyed. So that's what we want. So the devotees should become like that. Devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, a devotee lives to do good for others. Right? That's what we do. If we don't, if we're not doing that, then what are we doing? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other question?
Can you prove, for argument's sake, you can say Gandhava said to kill Duryodhana, but actually it was Krishna's plan to have Mahabharata. So even if you kill Duryodhana, there would be some other way because Krishna had some definite plans.
No, it's not like that. It's Krishna, one of Krishna's purposes is destroy ignorant people or miscreants. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. That's one part of his mission, destroy miscreants. But as Prabhupada explained, or is explained in this part of the purport, and Prabhupada also explains, Krishna doesn't want anyone to be a miscreant. Right? But if someone is a miscreant, then this is how Krishna will deal with them. So the battle of Kurukshetra was not necessary. Right? All the Kauravas, you know, Duryodhana, his 100 brothers, Karna, Ashwatthama, right? Who were the other bad guys? You know, Jayadrat, Dushasan, yeah, all the bad guys. Before the battle started, they could have just all come over to the Pandavas' camp in the morning for Mangalati, right? Sat down, chanted their chapter, done it, and then the whole battle could have been on. Pandavas would have been fine with it. The Pandavas weren't attached to killing everyone. But if they're going to misuse their independence, then Krishna says, then I have to deal with you in that way. Right, you bring the fight to us. Right, so that was because of the conditioned souls. It wasn't because of Krishna. Right, Krishna is just going to step in. Right, if the conditioned souls misuse their independence, but it's not Krishna's doing. Krishna did not create the battle. Right, but Krishna says my mission is if there are miscreants, then I will destroy them, and he does. Right, you'll see people who are, you know, miscreants. They always get destroyed. Look at Saddam Hussein. That man was a terrorist. He was a, you know, beyond comprehension how evil that person was. That conditioned soul just become very, extremely covered by the modes of material nature. Extremely covered. Extremely envious. Extremely arrogant. Extremely violent. Horrible, horrible, horrible. What did Krishna do to him? Crushed him. Just like that. And where is he now? Right? He's going through lifetimes, countless lifetimes of just being crushed by Krishna again and in pain and suffering and agony. Right? You're reading the fifth canto, what happens? Right? It's, yeah, give that a miss. So, any other points? Mataji?
You're talking about how we take in our mind, you know, that the subtle body goes with the subtle often. So if, you know, you sometimes see people saying, you know, that's a mental, you know, he's a mental person or she's a mental person, you know, not controlling mind of their people. So does that mean that's our just, like, if you're a mental person, you're staying lifetime?
No, not lifetime after lifetime, but it means in this lifetime, the subtle body is, some people have like a, how do you say, like a flickering mind, flickering. Some people have very steady minds. You know, they don't, their minds are very steady, you see that in their person. And other people's minds are very flickering. So that will stay like that, their flickering nature, that won't change totally. But the point is that, you know, they may have a flickering nature, but they have to engage that nature in Krishna's service. Right? See, some devotees, they can just do one service practically for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. You go to Mayapur and Vrindavan sometimes, and you meet pujaris in the temples who've been serving that deity for 60 or 70 years. Like, that's purity. Right? That's like a fixed mind. But there's, you know, some of us just think, oh, you know, I couldn't serve the deity for 5 minutes. You know, I need to do all different services. So that kind of devotee who has that kind of mind, that they need to do lots of different activities, then they should be engaged in that way by their authorities, so they can do lots of different activities for Krishna. And devotees who have a steady mind, then they can stick on one service and they can just continue on that. The point is that if we die, and if we have to take a birth again, and if we're primarily in the mode of goodness, then we'll be born with that kind of conditioning in our next life. And we'll take up devotional service, but we'll have more of a steady kind of nature, like that. Because you've purified yourself up through the modes, more into like a mode of goodness person. And then you'll, in your next life, you'll take birth and you'll have more of a mode of goodness nature in your service. You'll be more steady, like that. Is that okay? Any other points?
You just used the example of Saturn and Sun.
Yeah.
I was just wondering why Krishna seems to be impartial, because the people who killed Saturn and Sun, they're about 10-15% of the world's population, and yet they use probably 80% of the world's resources and you know, have killed many people.
Yeah.
I was just wondering why Krishna would be that way, why, you know, being impartial, that they get away with that.
In their next life, they'll all be born in different situations. They're just riding the waves of previous karma, that's all. Yeah. America's just, at this point in time, is just riding the waves of previous karma, that's all. And it's not going to go forever. And all the people in America are not going to be born in America forever. So whatever they're enjoying is not going to... And we should also not be complacent, because our country is actually a lot better than America in terms of living standards or lifestyle. Like, Australia is the best, if not one of the best places in the world to live. It's very comfortable here in a lot of ways. But we should not be complacent, because we're not going to be born here next time. Unless you're really attached to Radha-Bhava, but then, you know. Like Jit, you know, Jit's going to come back for 20 more lifetimes, like his brother's pujari, because he's attached like that. You had a point?
You were mentioning how much you take up devotional service from the point of goodness. And seeing, as you mentioned earlier, that in the age of Kali, as also mentioned in Sastra, Kala Sutra, Sangha, everyone is Sudra. So it seems impractical. Come from more of goodness and then take up devotional service. I'm just Rupa Goswami explaining that to devotion, how by taking up devotional service, then one comes from more of goodness. Like, for example,
maybe you didn't hear my whole class. I don't know if you heard the whole class, because I didn't describe it like that. I described it like the way you're saying.
Okay.
I didn't say it like I didn't say that you have to start at motive goodness and then take up devotional service. I said you have to, while doing devotional service, you have to elevate yourself to the motive goodness to do it effectively.
It's a regulated principle for devotional service within one to motive goodness.
Yeah, to a degree, but also being conscientious of the motive goodness will help. Right? So you could say regulative principles. The regulative principles, like the regulative principle is to do Mangalati. But you see devotees rushing and rushing and rushing in to do Mangalati. That's motive passion. That's not doing... So the regulative principle is there, but the devotee has to be mindful that the activities should be done in the motive goodness. That means you have to be there early enough to give yourself enough time to do it peacefully and properly. Like that. So it's, I would say it's not just enough to do the service, but you also have to be conscientious of how you do the service. Like that, which means you have to be conscientious of doing it in the mode of goodness. And if you read in Nectar of Instruction, in the introduction, in Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says, he talks about the modes, he says, by following bhakti yoga and everything, it'll bring you from ignorance to passion to goodness. Prabhupada says like that. And in the second chapter of the first canto, Prabhupada, in the purports, he gives these kind of indications too. So mode of goodness is important. Yeah. Otherwise, the way they say, well, I'm doing devotional service. You might be doing devotional service in passion and ignorance. Kapila Dev mentions this in the third canto of the Bhagavad Gita, in chapters 20, late 20s. He says there's devotional service in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion also, and that's not recommended like that. So we have to understand the modes of nature are important. Sometimes somebody say, I'll just do devotional service. Yeah, do devotional service, but do it in the mode of goodness. That's the point. Because Prabhupada says that is a springboard to pure goodness. You can't get to pure goodness from passion or ignorance. Not possible. But that's...
That makes sense.
Yeah, not that.
Well, can you give one example, like how, like somebody does devotion service in the mode of ignorance? Someone does devotion service in the mode of ignorance?
Yeah, if you read Kapila Dev's teachings in the third canto, he says devotees in the mode of ignorance are always angry with other devotees. If someone's always angry with the other devotees, he's in the mode of ignorance. He might be a devotee, but if he's always angry with the other devotees, then he's affected by the mode of ignorance. So that's not good. That will not lead to pure devotional service. If you look in the third canon, it will describe all these things. Any other points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.